Hello, hello. You are listening to Art House Garage, the snob-free film community where we make classic art house and indie cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and this is the third episode in our series on classic film essentials, where we are looking at some of the best movies from the classic era through a beginner's lens. If you are new to the world of classic cinema, you've come to the right place. In each episode, we discuss a movie and break down the historical context and the place that the actors and filmmakers hold in cinema history. Today's film is the all-time great All About Eve, starring Bette Davis and directed by Joseph Mankiewicz. My guest for this series is the incredibly knowledgeable Rance Collins, and he's back once again to give us all the details and behind-the-scenes drama for this film. But just before we get to that, a little Arkansas update. In the last episode, I mentioned the upcoming Hot Springs International Women's Film Festival. This is a festival taking place at the historic Central Theater in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and each of the films feature women in one of the key production roles. This is a big deal in the continuing fight for women's representation in the film industry, and I'm so happy the Arkansas film community is working hard to try and correct this problem. The festival lineup has been announced. You can see the whole schedule on the Hot Springs Women's Film Festival Facebook page, which I will link in the show notes, but I thought I'd go ahead and highlight just a couple of titles just to give an idea of the types of films that they will be showing. Many of these films are having their premieres and are being seen for the first time, and the program is a mixture of short and feature-length films, so you can literally just sit back and enjoy this carefully curated lineup. There are also a few acting workshops and other seminars for filmmakers, so if you are part of the film industry in Arkansas or in neighboring states, this is a great event to attend. As far as the movies go, here are a couple that I'm really excited to see. The first is a Chinese film called 5 Cent Life, and here's a little bit of the official description. This is, quote, the true story of Chinese citizen Lin Zhao, who lived through the Chinese Civil War that led to the rise of the communists. She attended a Christian school, but rejected Christian dogma and threw herself into communist activity, killing wealthy landowners during Mao's land reform movement. And that is just the beginning of the description. She apparently goes on to become a pretty controversial public figure. It sounds provocative and educational, and I cannot wait to see it. Another film playing is called Show Me What You Got. Here's what the description says for this one. Richly filmed in black and white on the cityscape of Los Angeles, three 20-somethings come together, sparking with the restless energy of the French New Wave. Each member of the threesome is in transition. So that sounds incredibly creative and another one that I'm really excited to catch. One note, at the time that I am recording this on March 16th, public health concerns around the coronavirus are leading to a lot of event cancellations. Literally just before I recorded this, I received word that they are postponing the festival for, quote, at least 45 days. It was originally set for the end of March, but it seems it is likely still going to happen just at a later time. Stay tuned to their Facebook page and to the Art House Garage Facebook page for more details when they come out. I'm so happy it's not canceled officially that it hopefully will still be on just a little bit later. All right, that's the Arkansas update. Now on to the main event, All About Eve. This film from 1950 tells the story of Margot Channing, a theater star who is aging and having a bit of an identity crisis. She is pushed to the edge by an adoring fan named Eve, who slowly begins to become part of her life and drives Margot wild with jealousy. Bette Davis plays Margot, and she is delightfully unhinged in some of the film's more dramatic scenes, but it's also a fascinating look at aging and show business, at female relationships, at fame, and at obsession. Rance and I do keep this discussion completely spoiler-free, so you are safe to listen if you've never seen it, though I hope you will seek it out and experience this amazing film for yourself. And now, my discussion with Rance Collins on the film All About Eve.
Honored members, ladies and gentlemen, for distinguished achievement in the theater, the Sarah Siddons Award to Miss Eve Harry.
I'm going to take you to Margot. Oh, no. Oh, yes, she's got to meet you.
She's quite a girl, this what's-her-name.
Eve. I've forgotten they grew that way. I take it she read well.
It wasn't a reading, it was a performance. Brilliant, vivid, something made of music and fire.
How nice.
Hello, Rance. Welcome back to Arthouse Garage. How are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing really well also, partially because I recently watched All About Eve for the first time and really, really loved it. Yeah. So how many times have you seen All About Eve?
Let's see. I don't know. 5, 6, something like that. I don't know. I think I watched it for the first time when I was in college. It came out in one of those Bette Davis box sets. And I watched it then, and then I'm pretty sure I showed it to a couple people. And recently, just about 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was the day of the Oscars. It was the day. It was the day of the Oscars. I saw All About Eve in at the Egyptian Theater here in Hollywood. So
that's great.
Anyway, so I've seen it quite recently.
Yeah, so I watched it, got it from the library and watched it a couple weeks ago and really, really enjoyed it. It's actually my first Bette Davis movie, too. So I was like, wow, she's amazing. And then doing some research and how she, you know, was an aging star, much like Margot, her character in the movie, and all the parallels there are really, really fascinating. Yeah, so let's dig into what the movie is about. It's all about Eve. But Eve, the title character, is not Bette Davis's character, Margot. But it opens up, and it's being narrated by, he's a critic, theater critic, named Addison DeWitt.
It's, George Sanders is the actor, and he has the, he's the silkiest voice, and he voiced Shere Khan. In the Jungle Book animated film.
That makes so much sense because he sounded vaguely familiar, but yeah, his voice is incredible and his character is so snarky and witty, and that he is one of my favorite things. I saw that he did win the Oscar, I believe, for that.
Yeah, for supporting.
To hear that. Actor, and there's some there's some Oscar drama with this too, which we'll get to. But so this is kind of about the theater world. So it's kind of interesting. You have like Hollywood people. It's sort of, it comments on Hollywood and movie culture quite a bit, but it's about theater stars. So Margot Channing is Bette Davis. She's the main character here. She is an aging star. She is kind of losing some ground as far as her fame goes. She's kind of a diva, I guess, is maybe a word that would describe her. And and she is in a relationship with... his name is Bill, and he is the director of the play that she's starring in. That's correct, right? And then
he's the director.
Their best friends are the screenwriter and his wife. Screenwriter is, or not screenwriter.
Playwright.
Playwright, yes.
Lloyd, yes.
Yes. Yes, which is Lloyd, and her husband is Karen. And so she and Karen are best friends. And that's kind of where it starts. Actually, it starts in the future and then jumps back in time to tell the story. It starts at an awards show.
Yes, it starts at the Sarah Siddons Awards, which is kind of a riff on like a Tony or something like that. And interestingly, the Chicago Theater Society now has a Sarah Siddons Award named in honor of this movie. And they gave Bette Davis an honorary one at some point.
That's amazing.
But the Sarah Siddons Society is awarding Eve Harrington, this breakout new theater star, an award. And then, you know, you see all the people you just mentioned in the audience, and none of them seem very happy.
Yeah. What's going on here? Yeah.
And then we flash back and we find out how Eve was a fan of Margot Channing, Bette Davis, and... started as an adoring fan and became her assistant and infiltrated her world.
Yeah, in a big way. And it's interesting. It kind of builds up in that award show that Eve is going to be seen, and so she's winning the award, and then you finally see her, and yeah, kind of the reactions of the main characters. And I said that Addison DeWitt is narrating. He is at the beginning. It actually jumps from narrator to narrator, which is kind of an interesting choice.
Yes.
And I think it makes for some kind of cool dramatic irony in a few places.
Yes.
So then it jumps to, yeah, the past.
And where, at the award ceremony, there's one of the reaction shots of Bette Davis is a pretty oft-used GIF as well. Of, I think it usually comes with the words "judging you" on it, and it's just her glaring at the at Eve. Apparently,
she has so many great. Just Bette Davis is, she's incredibly jealous. So yeah, so it, I guess briefly, it jumps back. Eve is this huge fan of hers, kind of a almost stalker level fan, groupie, kind of going to the theater every night to see her, and meets Karen, her best friend. Karen says, come meet everybody. And they hear her story of how she's divorced and or her husband died. Right. I think that's right. In the war.
Yeah. She has a big story. And Thelma Ritter, who plays Bette Davis's maid in the movie, Birdie, says something like, it's everything but the bloodhounds yapping at her.
Yeah. It's like a very dramatic story of how she got here, and now she loves the theater. She first saw Bette Davis's character Margot on stage many years ago, or a couple years ago, and has been obsessed ever since.
Been following her around, basically.
Yeah.
Is the way that's told. But
yeah,
once she gets in, you know, she somehow basically ends up tagging along with Bette Davis, and then Bette Davis kind of employs her to be an assistant, and slowly she starts to make Karen, the best friend, realize that, you know, hey, she wants to be an actress too.
Yeah.
What if she read for this part? What if she was Bette Davis's understudy in this play?
Yeah, she very kind of sneakily, or you really don't know if it's sneaky, because she plays it so innocently that you're like, is she being sneaky here, or is she just genuinely this young and naive and kind of like, well, I never thought about being an actor and all this stuff. And it kind of keeps you in suspense for what her real intentions are for a lot of the movie.
It does.
And I think that's a real strength of it, too.
The first person to turn on her, though, is the person who shows her the most affection to begin with, you know, Bette Davis.
Yeah.
Because Bette Davis really, Margot Channing really gives into that adoration at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then she's the first person to turn on her. And there's this amazing scene, which is at Bill's birthday party.
Yes.
And Bette Davis just owns everything that happens for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And she gets very inebriated, and she's barking at literally everybody in very sardonic, sarcastic ways. And she kicks it all off by announcing to the group, fasten your seatbelts, it's going to be a bumpy night, which is a famous line in movie history.
Yeah, I wondered if that was like the first time that phrase was kind of
that's the first time
because
that's
that felt
where it came from. Yeah,
another one of those moments like what we had in It Happens One Night, where it's, you know, I've heard that, I recognize that, and this is what it's from, and kind of that moment of realization is really amazing.
We know you. We've seen you like this before. Is it over or is it just beginning? Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
So that's this great party scene where she's, she's just in, just tearing into everyone, and she gets very drunk, as you mentioned, and she's really funny. She plays a really good drunk. There's a lot of comic
there's
stuff
just lots of little, she's really concerned that Eve is trying to go after her boyfriend, Bill. Bill is younger than she is. They make a big point out of this. Younger than Margot. At one point she says something like, Bill, it looks 32 is Bill is 32. He looks 32. He looked at 8 years ago. He'll look at 8 years from now. I hate men.
Yeah.
yeah. A so, lot of...
some of that is really feels timely still today too, with the way Hollywood treats women and
yes, know,
and how it's hard for aging women to get parts. So a lot of that felt very true. I think it's only gotten worse, actually.
They talk about how she's recently 40. Yeah,
and she's like, it's gonna be hard from here. Like, well, 40 today, it would be even harder anyway.
Yeah. And like when Bill is talking to Eve at the party, and he asks her what she wants to drink, and Bette Davis is like, a milkshake.
All these jokes about how she's a baby, and and Anne Baxter plays Eve, we should say.
Yes.
She has a great little monologue at the party scene where she's kind of overwhelmed by imagining she's famous, and you kind of see her obsession with that, and it start to really see like maybe there's more to what she's wanting to do here. But she's fantastic. And Anne Baxter, by the way, also my first movie of hers. She's so beautiful, and plays the jealousy angle between her and Bette Davis is just incredibly believable.
Interestingly, they became friends in real life, and then years later they did a musical version of All About Eve called Applause. And initially Lauren Bacall played the Margot Channing part, but then Anne Baxter was one of their replacements to play Margot.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, and then
reversed on that.
And then Bette Davis was in a pilot for a TV show in 1983 called Hotel, which was an Aaron Spelling, soapy drama. And the pilot got picked up, but then Bette Davis had a stroke and couldn't return to the show, basically. And so they needed a new matriarch for the show. So who did they bring in? Anne Baxter.
Anne Baxter, wow. So they had an interesting intertwined career for their lives. That's amazing.
Yes. Meanwhile, apparently she didn't go along with Celeste Holm, who played Karen.
Yes, I heard a little bit of that in my research.
Whenever she said, she went up to Bette Davis after they met and said something like, how do you do, Miss Davis? It's so great to meet you. And she said something like, oh shit, manners. So it could be a little cantankerous, although I will also say Celeste Holm later spoke at her AFI tribute in the late 70s. So I don't know if she's just one of those people who likes to tell stories or not, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe she has rewritten history a few times. But regardless, behind the scenes drama was very interesting for this film because Bette Davis has a fascinating career. And I very much encourage you to watch more than just this movie.
Yeah, I almost had time to watch Of Human Bondage, but I didn't quite squeeze it in. But that's on my list for soon.
Yeah, that's a good one. Although I will say that one is a little bit creakier as an earlier sound film. She does have, I mean, if you're looking for performances, I mean, she does a great job in that movie. She plays a Cockney waitress. It was her breakout performance. Because it was such an awful, unlikable character. As a movie, it just has a lot of those qualities that are very common of early sound films where they haven't really figured out the narrative format yet. And so it does have some problems, but she is very obviously a force of nature even then. That was her breakout film. It caused a lot of drama because it was a loan out picture. She was under contracts at Warner Brothers, and she had to get loaned out to RKO to make the movie. Warner Bros. Wanted to make the movie. And because of that, nobody campaigned for her to get a Best Actress nomination. She didn't get one, and it was a huge controversy. They ended up allowing write-in votes that year. Because of the controversy, which apparently Bette Davis ended up coming in third in the vote.
So she said it went, but Claudette Colbert won that year, correct?
Claudette Colbert won that year for It Happened One Night.
Yes.
And then after that, she won the next year for another movie she always thought of as a makeup Oscar, called Dangerous. And then after she wasn't getting the part she wanted, she walked out of Warner Brothers and made a deal with a European company to make some movies. And then Jack Warner took her to court and sued her, and she lost the suit. She had to come back to Warner Brothers, but she won their respect. And because she won their respect, they started giving her quality films. And for about 10 years, from 1937 to like 1947, 48, she was undisputedly the queen of Warner Brothers. A lot of people called her the fourth Warner Brother. Wow. And there were actually four Warner Brothers, but one of them died in 1927. So she then took on the title. And there is a very pretty high quality series of what a lot of people would call woman's pictures. She did a lot of the melodramas, romantic melodramas, like now Voyager is a really great film, Dark Victory. And she got Oscar nominations, 5 in a row, ended up getting 10 overall. A lot of them came in this period where she was lighting Hollywood on fire. And while she was doing all of that, she was also very active in the World War II civilian war effort. She started something called the Hollywood Canteen in 1942 with an actor named John Garfield. And the two of them started this canteen, which entertained millions of servicemen and women who were passing through Los Angeles on their way to be shipped out overseas. And they offered free of charge a hamburger, milkshake. There was no alcohol allowed. Cigarettes were they handed out cigarettes, though, because it was the 40s. And coffee, you know. And you could they always had the biggest names in live bands. Glenn Miller played all the time. And you could dance with Starlet every night of the week was hosted by a different studio. So one night it was MGM, and they all of their people were staffing. But, you know, Marlena Dietrich was known for working in the kitchen and cleaning the dishes. And, and Bette Davis was in charge of this. So she was there almost every single night after she finished up at the studio. And, you know, she was later honored by the United States government for her services. But she had been this like incredibly active member. She was the first female president of the Academy. Only for a few months, though, because she suggested all of these changes to the way that they did the awards, including having them in front of an audience instead of a banquet, and a few other things. And they said, "Ah, we don't like any of that." And then she resigned, and of course within a few years it was in front of an audience instead of a banquet. They just wanted her to be a figurehead. Point of the story, she was huge in every single way. And when she started aging and that became more visible on screen and other stars became bigger, you know, and her movies stopped making as much money, and also, to be fair, the quality was going down because Warner Brothers wasn't picking good projects for her. She and WB decided to part ways, and she filmed one little movie after that that actually didn't get a release until after All About Eve, but basically her career was dead in the water, and nobody was going to hire her because she was not box office anymore. So Claudette Colbert, who we are going to revisit now, was set up to play Margot Channing in this film. And 3 weeks before they were supposed to start shooting, she slipped a disc in her back and was laid up and couldn't do the part. And so Bette Davis was contacted at the last minute. It should be said that I believe a director who had worked with Bette Davis in Now Voyager and a couple other films said something to Joseph Mankiewicz, who directed and wrote All About Eve, like, do not hire her. She will take over the film and leave nothing left for you. He went ahead and went with it. Anyway, Joseph Mankiewicz sent the script to Mae Davis. She agreed immediately. She was getting over a bad case of laryngitis, something that she had suffered from quite a bit, probably because she smoked like a chimney. Joseph Mankiewicz ended up liking the fact that her voice was as raspy as it was for this part. And she got onto the set, and they started out with location shooting in San Francisco, which is where the theater they have in a lot of the movie was located. And she fell in love with the guy who played Bill, Gary Merrill, and the two of them ended up getting married.
They were both married to other people, right? Isn't that true?
Yes, and she was in the process of already getting a divorce, to be fair, from a guy, I forget his name, but he was the father of her only biological child. She and Gary Merrill would adopt two children of their own and be together for about 10 years. Essentially, and then he later was with Rita Hayworth as well.
Interesting.
So he got around.
He had quite a run there.
He had quite a run. This is how Bette Davis ended up with this part. She later described Joseph L. Mankiewicz as being the one who resurrected her from the dead. He also suggested the epitaph that would be written on her gravestone, and is written on her grave here at Forest Lawn in Los Angeles. And that is, she did it the hard way. So that is how Bette Davis came to be involved in this movie. And Baxter was already a pretty prolific actress at this point. She was under contracts at Fox, who produced the film. And she had won a supporting actress Oscar for a movie called The Razor's Edge a few years before. But this was undoubtedly the biggest movie she would do. Also, Celeste Holm had a pretty solid career up until this point. In supporting parts, she had won an Oscar for Gentleman's Agreement, which was an Elia Kazan movie that won Best Picture in 1947. Then George Sanders had been a pretty frequent actor in a lot of different types of projects up to this point, and he had played the Saint in one of those film serials of the day. He's also in a great Alfred Hitchcock film called Rebecca. Foreign Correspondent, another Hitchcock movie. He's often a bad guy, but he does play good guys as well. But he's in a ton of different movies from the period. And so you assembled a really great cast. Joseph L. Mankiewicz was the hot up-and-coming director-writer combo of the day.
Yes, tell us about just him won and the Mankiewicz family.
The whole legacy.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Joseph L. Mankiewicz also had a brother named Herman. Herman had written a movie called Citizen Kane, which we'll get to.
A little movie.
Joseph had started out as a writer in Hollywood, and he had transitioned to directing. And the year before All About Eve, he won Best Director and Best Writing for the movie A Letter to Three Wives. It did not win Best Picture, but All About Eve did, as well as writing and directing. So he became the only person in history to win directing and writing both 2 years in a row. He would go on to direct a lot of really great films in the 50s and 60s. He did the Elizabeth Taylor version of Cleopatra. He did a movie called Suddenly Last Summer with Elizabeth Taylor and Katharine Hepburn and Montgomery Clift. That's a really really crazy Tennessee Williams story that I quite enjoy. He also did a pretty well-known version of Julius Caesar with Marlon Brando and James Mason. And I'm skipping over something really big that
Sleuth?
He did.
Is it Sleuth?
Oh, he did Sleuth, which is a two-person movie, only two people in the film, Laurence Olivier and Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you're going to have two people in a movie.
Two really good ones.
So he was undoubtedly one of the best, honestly, in the business. And he ended up having his own legacy in terms of his family, particularly his brother Herman, I should say. Herman had a son who would go on to become a political figure. His son was the campaign manager for both Robert Kennedy in 1968, that ill-fated campaign.
Yeah, wow.
And he was the campaign manager for a different type of ill-fated campaign, George McGovern, in 1972. And then he had two sons, one of which is Josh Mankiewicz, who is the one of the hosts of Dateline on NBC, Nightline's ABC, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Dateline NBC, yeah. And then Ben Mankiewicz, who is the patron saint host of Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah, who you've worked with many times, yeah?
Yes, who I know pretty well, yes.
So that's pretty cool, just family legacy that's still going today. Look for Ben Mankiewicz on TCM and have a new appreciation for him and his family legacy. It's pretty cool.
quite a legacy.
Yeah. So this movie, let's talk about the Oscars controversy with it, because basically the votes were split, right, for supporting or for a lead actress.
That is the general consensus, and I don't want to disparage anything on Judy Holliday's performance in Born Yesterday. She's a great little actress, very funny. But it's interesting because All About Eve came out the same year as another movie that is also in the AFI Top 100 on the National Film Registry, is considered an all-time classic, Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
Also turned into a Broadway musical.
So good.
As well. Sunset Boulevard's a great movie. Billy Wilder wrote and directed. We'll be talking about another Billy Wilder film next week.
Some similar themes in that movie as far as like aging stars. Yeah.
Both movies about aging stars. One who gets her life together and the other who does not.
Yeah.
But also represented a comeback for the lead actress. Not quite the level of a comeback that Bette Davis had. In the sense that Bette Davis continued to make movies and Gloria Swanson not as much. Yeah. But Sunset Boulevard was nominated for not only Best Picture and Director and Writing and all of that, it also, of course, got a Best Actress nomination for Gloria Swanson. And Bette Davis got a Best Actress nomination for All About Eve. And Anne Baxter got a nomination for All About Eve.
And so you pushed for that, right? Like she pushed for lead instead of supporting Anne Baxter.
Which, to be fair, is fair. The movie, her name's in the title.
She's a big part of it, yeah.
Her role is probably as big as Bette Davis's in the movie. They are co-leads. But although Bette Davis, I feel, is who you walk away remembering from the film, and her performance, I think, is... I don't think you can argue it isn't the best performance in the movie, in a movie with lots of great performances. Yeah. But, you know, Margot's a nuanced, it's a creation. It's a really, it's a great character.
Yeah. So they were both nominated in the leading category and then neither of them won.
Yes. And my thought is more that because I doubt Anne Baxter was ever really... I don't think she was probably ever the favorite compared to Bette Davis, you know, but I think Gloria Swanson being there as well probably really heavily split the vote.
Yeah.
And which allowed the person who was maybe the number three or the number four on a lot of people's lists to break through. That said, I mean, Judy Holliday is really great in Born Yesterday, so I don't want to take anything away from her performance. But I also think that Bette Davis's Margaret Channing is one of the great characters of all time.
The supporting actress category
was also full with nominations.
Because
both Celeste Holm and Thelma Ritter, who played her maid Birdie,
got the really first of her barely six. In this, but she is very memorable, and I was happy to see she was nominated.
Yeah, she kind of disappears halfway through the movie.
But
Thelma Ritter ended up getting six nominations, and for supporting actress, and she lost every single time. But she is one of the great character actresses of the 50s and 60s, and a lot of people would probably know her from a Hitchcock movie called Rear Window, where she has undoubtedly her best role, and oddly not a nomination, for playing the nurse who is attending to Jimmy Stewart while he's put up with his broken leg. Can't think of her name in that movie, but
I can't either.
But anyway, it's it's a truly great little career. And she made quite a living off of being the cantankerous smart aleck that she is in this film. It also has Marilyn Monroe is also in the movie.
I was going to mention that. I actually didn't realize it was her until halfway through seeing her. I was like, hold on, that's Marilyn Monroe. She's very young in it, and a really small part, but really funny. And
yes, very much kind of playing on her shtick like she always did. But this is before she became famous, although she was becoming a thing quickly enough that she is featured pretty heavily in the poster art for a lot of the All About Eve. Yeah. So if you look at the poster that's on like IMDb, her face is right there in the corner.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Stella is the name of the character in Rear Window. I feel good for figuring that out.
I was going to mention other Oscar nominations. It was nominated but did not win for cinematography, which back then it was cinematography black and white, was a different category, I guess, than cinematography color.
And that's fair. It's interesting. You compare it to Sunset. Did Sunset Boulevard win? I feel like it should have.
I can find out really quick. But it was also nominated for set direction and film editing and music, but then it won for director for Mankiewicz, screenplay, costume design, sound recording, and then best actor for George Sanders, we mentioned, and then best picture.
Best supporting actor. That's 14 nominations, which is a tie for the most ever. Both Titanic and La La Land have got 14 as well. So this is the namesake of the movie that had the most nominations.
On the cinematography black and white question, The Third Man actually won that year.
Sunset
Boulevard was nominated but did not win. I've seen The Third Man too, actually, and that's
it's a great one. Film, but it actually most of the time the release date is written as 1949, but I think it competed a year later because of it was a British film.
I'm glad it won for screenplay, because I think that's, I mean, as many strengths as this has, the screenplay I think is maybe its strongest. It's really, really well written. The thing I thought about this movie after watching it was like, wow, I need to watch that several more times in my life, and I'll keep remembering new lines from it, because there's several just really witty lines, memorable scenes. There's a fight scene in the theater where Bette Davis is fighting with the screenwriter, or keep saying screenwriter, playwright, and she gets just very unhinged and really loses it, because here another plot detail is that Anne Baxter's character Eve is her understudy without her knowing it, basically, and shows up at an audition and just kills it and kind of becomes famous, or starts to become famous because of that kind of break.
Even the way she enters that scene when she, one of the other side characters, Max, the character, producer, says hello, and she's wearing this ridiculous fur coat, and she opens up her coat as she walks past him, going through an aisle in the theater, and covers his face, sweeps it over his face. And there's all those little moments. I should mention, talking about costuming, this is also Edith Head, you know, one of her Oscars for costume design is this movie. And Edith Head is probably the most famous costume designer of all time.
She's the one the character is based on in The Incredibles, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Edna Mode.
Edna Mode, yes. Yeah, is based on her. So if you've never heard Edith Head, that's sort of what she's like. She's been a big deal for a long time.
Yeah, like a page boy haircut and the big spectacles.
Yeah.
And a very thin, lean frame. And she put together costumes for literally everybody that you can think of in Hollywood. And she purposefully designed all of Betty's costumes to be kind of a little lower on the shoulder because Betty didn't like wearing bras.
Interesting.
So she had to alter waistlines and stuff just for that purpose. There's a good line she had that said, was something like, I'll have to think about the line. Go on to whatever you're going to say, and I'll come back to it.
I have a few lines that I wrote down that were really good. Mm-hmm. There's one memorable about, I want to mention her voice too, actually. So I wondered, I need to see more Betty Davis movies to see if her voice was always like that. And you mentioned the laryngitis and all that, but she's very, she has a line about, oh, we're all just busy little bees. And she's kind of very throaty and deep voice. And it just makes her delivery really funny in a lot of places.
Don't get up. And please stop acting as if I were the queen mother.
I'm sorry I didn't
Outside of a beehive, Margot, your behavior would hardly be considered either queenly or motherly.
You're in a beehive, pal, didn't you know? We're all busy little bees, full of stings, making honey day and night. Aren't we, honey? Margot, really?
Yeah, she has that. And a lot of her later career, too, the raspier quality sets in. I mean, being a heavy smoker, that is going to happen to your voice. But if you listen to her in movies from the 30s, you'll see she has a much higher pitched voice than she does in this film.
Yeah. Another line I was going to mention, and this kind of points at one of the bigger themes of the movie. So it's very much about fame and obsession with, I don't know, like fan bases and all of that, which is interesting seeing it so long ago that there were rabid fans then too that became really obsessed. But she had a line, someone says to her, "Sometimes I wish I understood you better," because she was just reacting big and kind of flying off the handle. And she says, "When you do, let me in on it." So it kind of points to the fact that she doesn't really know herself. And then that becomes back to, and later on, there's a serious conversation about all this jealousy that she feels towards Eve. It's just really causing her to have a kind of an identity crisis. I think she's been this famous stage actress for her whole life, and that's starting to fade, and she doesn't know what to do and doesn't know who she is. So I think that was one of the most compelling things to watch, is the moments in that theme came out. That was very, very interesting for me.
Yeah. It's such a screenwriting well-done movie, because it gets away with it because they're all theater people. So you buy them talking so intelligently. Being over the top. But I mean, the dialogue is so smart in this movie. It's just like a smart person's dream, honestly, the way they talk.
Mm. It's very fast too in a lot of places. It reminded me. So, I mean, very different feeling, but if you've ever seen the show Veep, it kind of had that feeling of like very quick-witted, just jumping back and forth. And but yeah, of course, not to that level of, I don't know, raunchiness that show has. But yeah, that kind of banter a lot of the time.
It's the way you wish you talked to your friends, you know? It's the way that you... Not the way you wish you treated your friends, but it's the way you wish you talked to your friends. Even the nonverbal stuff, like whenever there's one point where Betty Davis lifts up a celery stick to George Sanders in a restaurant, and she lifts it up to him, and then he acknowledges it, and then she takes a bite out of it. yeah. Almost like a big like middle finger to him. And there's all sorts of little stuff like that that is so wonderful. Or you can always put that award where your heart ought to be, you know. Great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I didn't give any context for that line because I don't want to ruin it. For anyone who hasn't seen the movie. But the movie also it takes some twists and turns, and it does it through a way that's totally character based, which is what's so brilliant about it. And then Bette Davis has probably one of her, I mean, she has lots of great moments in this, but probably one of her great monologue of her career comes whenever they're stalled in a car, about 3/4 the way through the movie. And she talks about a woman's career, you know, which I think there's so much pathos in that. It looks like you're looking like someone confessed their soul to the camera. It's just a really great movie.
Yes, I agree. And everyone should watch it.
The Edith Head quote that I didn't remember is, "No one can drop a mink like Bette Davis."
Oh, that's good.
Whatever that means.
So I wanted to mention too, just there's a moment where, and I won't kind of spoil what's going on, but basically Karen, the best friend, has this moment where she just bursts out laughing about what's going on. And it's so well done. So that's towards the end. And it's one of those moments of just great writing where it really takes you off guard and surprising, but it makes perfect sense. And it's like cathartic almost.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a really and it great follows, moment. It follows one of those great, just 2 minutes before that laugh happens, you have one of those great gasp moments where something happens to Karen, where you're like, what? Where you don't realize the depths of darkness that you just went into until you see this look in the person's eyes that she is talking to.
Yes, there's a great, it gets really twisty towards the end and surprising, and just how far it goes is some of the pleasure of this movie.
I will say, I was talking earlier about how between Bette Davis and Anne Baxter, I feel like Bette Davis clearly has the more complicated, interesting character and performance. But I will say, Anne Baxter does a really, really good job.
Yeah.
Once you take in the performance in its totality, without saying too much.
Another reason I want to watch this again. Before too long is seeing, knowing the endings, you'll see a lot of things in different light a little bit. I think that's really great.
Yes, it is. It's the ultimate movie on the theater. It's the ultimate movie on aging. I don't know. It just has life of an actress. It has so much going on. And on top of all of that, it's just so smart and is so much fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
it gets going quick, and you won't be bored watching this for sure.
Even though it is about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it was. So. When I first started, I was like, wow, this is 2.5 hours. Wow. It goes quick, and I was with it 100% of the way. And that's all about Eve. I think we can wrap it up. Thanks so much for joining, Rance. And I will once again tell everyone, watch All About Eve. And we will talk to you again next time.
Can't wait.
I couldn't do this without Rance Collins. Big thanks again to him for being part of this season. If you missed them, go back and listen to the first two episodes in this series on It Happened One Night and Casablanca. And coming up, we've got the movies Double Indemnity, The Best Years of Our Lives, and a big one to finish it out, Citizen Kane. If you want to support the show, leave us a rating and review on iTunes and keep up with Arthouse Garage on the socials. We are at Arthouse Garage on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Letterboxd. You can also find video reviews on YouTube and reviews and events on the blog at arthousegarage.com. You can also hit me up on email, andrew@arthousegarage.com. That will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.